soul-drenched sound that doesn't quite sit in a neat box of influences. The night also includes DJ sets by DJ Black Daria and DJ Shishi of Everyday Mixtapes. This is a 21 and over event. Again, that's Il Camille and Fritzwa, Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When radio got taken over by advertising, people in Portland decided to do it themselves. And in 1968, they created a space that was free from advertisers and independent from corporate or mainstream media interest. KBOO Community Radio. This is the very essence of DIY culture. And KBOO was there in the 70s as people were taking back music spaces. In the 80s, when artists were taking back music distribution. And in the 90s, supporting the small press revolution and all movements of self-expression. Help us build a city of artistic media makers. Long live DIY radio and join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Need some food in my belly. Need some drink for the dry in my throat. Need for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat. Don't you know it ain't right?
Welcome to the KBOO Food Show. I'm your host, Chris Siegel. Today, I'll be talking with some folks from the Portland Area Community Supported Agriculture Coalition, or PACSAC, about the upcoming CSA Share Fair. The fair is going to be held on February 25th and is an opportunity to meet directly with farmers from the region. I'll also be talking with Marisha Auerbach for our monthly garden segment. We're going to talk about what you can do in this winter weather, as well as ways to get a jump on the beginning of the growing season. But first, hunger is a real issue facing Oregonians and the rest of the country. We talk about it a lot on this show. Problems such as lack of affordable housing, low wages, systemic racism, and lack of protection and resources for people in poverty make it so that it feels like an insurmountable hurdle. Knowing this, I recently talked with Megan Shea, one of the co-founders of the Soulful Project, about the partnership with Fred Meyer and the Oregon Food Bank that she and her company have recently created. The Soulful Project has a buy one, give one model for the oatmeal that they sell. For every serving sold in a store, they donate a serving to a food bank. Here's that conversation with Megan Shea. So just to give the listeners an idea, what exactly does the Soulful Project do?
Sure. The Soulful Project is a new breakfast company, and we make a delicious hot cereal, all whole grains, non-GMO, ingredients like steel-cut oats and quinoa, flax and chia, but make it really convenient, a really easy way to fit into your life. But on top of that, for every serving that someone buys of the Soulful Project, we donate a serving to a food bank in the same region. So it's a buy one, give one, and it's a great way for you to start the day right for yourself and knowing that you're helping a neighbor in need.
So we're going to get to, you know, why it's relevant that I'm talking with you, your relationship with the Oregon Food Bank. But before we do that, can you just tell us a little bit about some of the products that you have?
Sure. We launched just a few months ago with breakfast because for so many people, including myself, breakfast is really a meal that we still haven't figured out how to eat healthy and fit into our busy lives. And so started with something with hot cereal. Took something as mundane as oatmeal, and then added ingredients like quinoa and chia, flax seeds, all of those things that we hear so much we should be eating more of, but a lot of times it's hard to find a way to fit into your everyday life. And so we have four individual cups that all you have to do is add hot water. We have family-sized bags, which are great. My kids actually eat them in the morning for breakfast, and now we actually just launched individual packets as well.
Great. And what is it that sets apart the oatmeal from the Soulful Project? Why when people see it on the shelves, will they choose it?
We really wanted to create a breakfast that we would want to eat and that we would feel really good about what we were eating, and knowing that there was a mission behind it. My co-founder and I, Chip, and I had met a family in need and had made a promise to help them in a more meaningful way. They lived hand to mouth with the food, you know, with the money that they had is what they would be able to go to the store that afternoon and buy for dinner. And so they were struggling not just putting food on the table, but they were struggling with healthy food, ways of getting food that wasn't going to make them sick. And so that's why we created a company like Soulful Project, which is really about taking those healthy, wholesome, nutrient-dense ingredients and making them really accessible. And then making sure that with every purchase, you can actually help a neighbor that's struggling with the same things.
So I want to dig more into the kind of the genesis of the Soulful Project, because it seems like that story is really important. Could you go into some more detail about exactly how and when you came up with the idea?
Sure. We, as I had said, had met a family that was very much in need, and we gave them extra food and we gave them extra money, but we had made this promise that we were going to do something more meaningful to help them, something more than just, you know, enough to kind of keep food on the table for a week. And then we were actually on a business trip when we had met them, and we came back from that trip and then came back to our lives, which involve young kids and work and soccer games and everything that goes along with, you know, being busy in life these days. And honestly, a week turned into a month, turned into a year, and we had never followed through on that promise. And about a year after we had met that family, we were reminded of that promise. We were working in Camden, New Jersey, which is a community that has very much struggled. And there was a knock at the door, and it was a mom with three kids asking for food to put on her table that night. And we just looked at each other and said, you know, we broke the promise initially. We never followed through. We didn't really help that family. We didn't really help this family either. We need to do something different. And we really wanted to find a way to create a company that made those good choices really easy. All of us want to be more involved. All of us want to do better and make better choices. And life just gets in the way. And so that's where the idea for the Soulful Project came from.
Can you tell me a little bit about the name, the Soulful Project? I mean, it doesn't say to me, you know, oatmeal company or selling something. Like what is it about the name that kind of captures what you're doing?
Sure. Soulful is really around fill your body, fulfill your soul. That's what we were really focused on. Things that would really make you feel really good about what you were buying for yourself and putting in, you know, eating for yourself, and then knowing that you're helping someone at the same time. But the word project is really the heart of the brand, because something like food insecurity, which affects 40 million Americans across the country, or something like getting more involved in your community and finding easy ways to actually help and follow through on that, that's not something that's going to be solved by one person. And so that's really where the idea for the project came from, that all of us really have to get in together, and that it allows for evolution and learning and really building something together.
And I find it interesting. I mean, you talk about the project. When I heard you speak about Soulful Project, the kind of the relationship with Campbell's Soup, this kind of bigger food company. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship between the Soulful Project and Campbell's Soup?
Sure. We were working for Campbell's Soup on a completely unrelated project. We were on, Chip and I were on the same team when we were on that business trip, and then we also were working for Campbell's when we came up with the idea for the Soulful Project. But it was something that we did at night, on the weekends, on the sides, because neither of us had ever built a company before. We had never started something like this. And so when we were ready to launch, we actually took it to Campbell's, and they agreed to fund it as a startup. And so it's been this, you know, great experiment. And we have, you know, we're so lucky that we have the support from a company like Campbell, but also from all of the employees at Campbell who have really gotten behind it and helped us. So I like to say we're like a startup with massive training wheels.
I like that. So the reason I'm talking with you is because you've started a relationship with the Oregon Food Bank and Fred Meyer. Can you tell a little bit about that relationship and how it came about?
Sure. So we launched Soulful just a year ago, and just here in the Northeast, around the New Jersey area, with three giving partners, because we really wanted to make sure that we could deliver on this mission and that people liked the product and we could actually help food banks along the way. And we quickly saw that, yes, we could, that these our products are something that food banks absolutely want and that people around the country want as well. And so we've been growing pretty rapidly. And Fred Meyer approached us about bringing Soulful Project into the Pacific Northwest. And the team from Fred Meyer just leaned in, and all of them, because it really wraps around the idea of, you know, Kroger's initiative around zero waste, zero hunger. But they really helped us as a startup come into their stores very rapidly. And so with that, and with the distribution at Fred Meyer, we've expanded our giving partner now to include the six food banks in the Pacific Northwest. And one of them is the Oregon Food Bank. What's incredible to see is when you think about scale, as with a company like Fred Meyer coming on board and really, you know, leading this mission into, you know, Oregon and Portland, we were actually able, just from their initial orders, to donate over 30,000 servings of our hot cereal to the Oregon Food Bank alone. And we're able to do that to all of the six food banks in the Pacific Northwest. So it's really incredibly exciting to see.
I guess I should, you know, maybe asking Fred Meyer themselves, but what do you think, why do you think they approached you to make this happen?
I think one is that the people that work at Fred Meyer have the same, you know, concerns that we do, right? Which is how do you make those good choices really easy? And so I think that they were really, you know, taken with this idea of here's something that is not only good for, you know, their shoppers and their customers, but that also can help a neighbor. What's also really incredible is that as we've gone and expanded our network, so now we work with over 200 food banks around the country, is you see that the stores themselves have incredible relationships with the food banks, because the food banks are in their stores every day picking up items and then making sure it's getting out to the community, especially fresh produce. And so it's a really great way for them to actually support the relationships that they have with these food banks.
Could you just have the relationship with the food bank, or do you need a go-between sort of like Fred Meyer?
No, I think we've actually spent the past year driving around the country, and as we've expanded with customers, stopping in and meeting with food banks, volunteering with them, learning about their about what they're struggling with. And what we've seen is that, and someone, a food bank CEO once said this, when you've seen one food bank, you've seen one food bank. All 200 of them are incredibly different because they're all meeting the needs of their individual community. And so, you know, I think that one thing is with the customers, it definitely helps. But more importantly, the food banks across the country are really struggling to make sure that they are consistently getting a healthy and enough supply to feed the number of people that are food insecure in this country. And it's significant.
The model of the Soulful Project is this sort of buy one, give one model. Where does that fit in challenging food insecurity?
We started with a buy one, give one, because one, it is a great expression and a great awareness for how to help your food banks. Most of our mission is really focused around getting people more involved in their communities. And so we really believe at Soulful, just like you know, we had our own personal issue around how do you help someone in need, right? Starting very simply with just, you know, purchasing a breakfast for yourself that's helping another, it raises awareness and it makes you aware. And we find that giving is contagious. It makes it a lot easier to start becoming more involved. And all of our content, everything we focus on is really how to get more involved, including volunteering and helping with other things in your community. But in terms of the food insecurity, one is what we actually donate is something that we developed with our first giving partner, the Food Bank of South Jersey. So we donate our four-grain blend hot cereal, which is available for sale. It's the same product that we sell is what we donate. And what the four-grain blend hot cereal is fantastic because it's all whole grains. It cooks up incredibly quickly, and there's no added sugar. And for so many people who leverage food banks and so many people who don't even leverage food banks, sugar continues to be a huge concern. And so it's really a wholesome breakfast that is needed in food banks. And I think that that's one of the big keys around food insecurity is it's not just around handing out food. It's also making sure, and this is what food banks are doing day in and day out, making sure that you're handing out quality food, healthy food, and food that will, you know, support their clients.
Was there anything that you learned or any kind of stories that you came across when you were on that trip and kind of getting this project going?
Yes, we continue those road trips, actually. So there's been lots of personal stories, but I think for me, as we've gone and met with all of these food banks and, you know, we meet and we volunteer and we post a lot of these stories about people we've met on our Facebook page, really to draw attention to each community. But I think what's really incredible to see is, one, how food insecurity affects every community in the country. And in Oregon, it is higher than actually the national average. I think it's 1 in 13 people in Oregon suffer from food insecurity versus and so that's definitely a concern. On the other side of it is just really seeing how each food bank is so different. When we toured the food banks in Virginia, especially around a lot of the naval bases, seeing that a lot of the families that they're serving are deployed military members and how they respond to that and to that need while that family member is overseas. You know, when we've gone and met with the food bank up in Reading, Pennsylvania, for them, 90% of the kids in public school in Reading qualify for the free lunch program. So a lot of their efforts are really around the backpack programs that get sent home to kids on weekends, because when school's not in session, they're not getting the breakfast and lunch that they get in school. So how do you keep them from being hungry over the weekends or over holidays? And, you know, I know, Portland's dealing with some winter weather, but I think probably the most heartbreaking story I heard was when we were down in North Carolina and hearing about a school principal who got a call on the third snow day from a young child asking, are you going to cancel school again? And the child wanted to come back to school because they were hungry. And so you go and you see these, you know, see these stories and you meet these people and, you know, it's incredibly, you know, heartbreaking in some areas, but then on the other side of it, you see that there are incredible organizations all around the country that are helping to meet these needs and keep these problems from growing any larger and trying to solve them. And it's all supported by individuals and volunteers and people getting more involved.
Great. So I've got a challenging question, but and it's kind of what food banks are facing as well. I mean, the idea is if you can eliminate hunger, then as a food bank, you're putting yourself out of business. And I'm assuming it's the same, you know, if you are working towards this goal of ending hunger, you are kind of putting your model out of business. So what do you see as like as the future or the future that you want to see, and where the Soulful Project fits in that?
I think that it's actually one of the questions I ask most of the food banks, which is, what would it take to put you out of business? And it's something that they challenge themselves with all the time. And so first of all, if the Soulful Project went out of business because there was no more food insecurity in this country, I think that would just be fantastic. In the meantime, you know, for us with Soulful Project, right now we're really focused on our food, on food insecurity across the country, but more importantly, we're also focused on how do you get more involved in your community? How do you take the time, an hour out of your lunch, an hour on your lunch break, right, taking your kids along? How do you become more involved in our community? Because we really believe that by individuals giving a little bit more of their time, understanding that it doesn't take a huge commitment, but an hour can really make a difference in someone's life, that we can solve a lot of problems, not just food insecurity, but a lot of other problems that are facing communities across this country.
Could you, so what are some examples of like ways that you're getting people to be engaged with their community?
Sure. Well, when we launched, we actually started something called the Soulful 100. And this might have been penance, I guess, for not following through on our original promise. But it was 100 volunteer events in 100 days performed by the team with our first three giving partners. And it was incredible. We did everything from packing senior food box distribution to the kids' backpack programs that we talked about, warehouse sorting. We were even out in farm fields doing gleaning, which is harvesting crops and then getting them to food banks before they were plowed under. And we used every day that we were out volunteering, we posted about it and talked about it on our social media. And one, to see the response around the country was incredible. But two, I think it really opened a lot of people's eyes up to the fact that you don't have to sign up for a six-hour shift every week, that something as little as giving an hour or an extra $5 or just there are some really easy ways to get involved, and it really does have a huge impact on your community. And so that's what we're doing, is basically as we go around and work with each food bank is really just drawing attention right now to, you know, here are some really easy ways to get involved. We even did a fundraiser for a food bank a few months ago where we agreed to take a pie in the face if we hit our dollar goal. So, you know, there's some fun things that you can do to really draw attention to it. And, yeah, we did take pies in our face.
So we're about out of time, but I want to ask you, you know, kind of again, the future. I imagine you want to grow your impact and grow the Soulful Project. Where do you see the Soulful Project in 5 years?
Well, right now we are very much focused on just bringing the mission across the country, working and meeting with each food bank, and really understanding how we can actually help them. But, you know, as we've seen just a tremendous outpouring from people and consumers that are really involved and really interested in finding additional ways to give back. And so, you know, as we're basically looking to see how can we expand on that promise. This promise that here's a company that is going to give you something that you feel really good about what you're buying for yourself, and knowing that with every purchase, you're going to help a neighbor, and keeping it as local as possible. So that's really our big focus right now as we expand. And, you know, but I do like the goal of what you set, which is, can we even put ourselves out of business by helping to solve food insecurity? I like that.
And where can people learn more about the Soulful Project?
Sure. Well, you can go to our website, Soulful, S-O-U-L-F-U-L-L, two L's, project.com. And there we not only have the listing of all the food banks that we work with, but we actually have a tracker on our website. So you can actually see where the donations are going to and then how many servings are going to each food bank in that region. So it's really great to see. And then you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and go check out all the stories about all the volunteers and food banks that we've met to date.
Great. Megan, thank you so much for joining me on The Food Show.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That was Megan Shea, co-founder of The Soulful Project. You're listening to The Food Show on KBOO Community Radio. Up next, we have our monthly garden segment with Marisha Auerbach. Want to get a jump on the 2018 growing season? And be sure to stay tuned in for that conversation. I'll also be talking with Holly Hutchison and Melissa Cullen about PacSac's upcoming CSA Share Fair. Stay with us. This is The Food Show on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Chris Siegel. It's hard to think about the garden when it's covered in snow, but now is the perfect time to get a jump start on the 2018 growing season. So that you're not caught off guard when it's time to get back to the garden, I'm joined by Marisha Auerbach, who is going to help us get ready for the coming season. Marisha, welcome back to The Food Show.
Hi, Chris. Good to be back.
So this is usually a bad small talk question, but you do work in permaculture and gardening, so I'm going to ask it. How are you feeling about this weather?
I'm so excited about the weather right now. We really need some prolonged cold to knock back some of the pest populations that build up over these hot summers. So the snow's really beautiful. It provides a good opportunity to slow down and enjoy our landscapes and hope that those aphids and whiteflies are getting knocked back.
Great. And are you able to get out and have fun in it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I walked all over last night while it was falling. It's just been such an unusually warm winter, and it's been interesting how our rain pattern has changed. So I'm delighted that we have a new snow pattern too, it seems like, after last year and this year. I think it's really nice.
So as of now, Portland is covered in snow. Is there anything people can do in the garden when it's completely white?
Well, the most important thing that I've been doing due to the snow is beating the snow off my cold frame. It's a polytunnel, and it might break from the weight of the snow. So that's something to really think about. I did that about 3 times yesterday. And it also could be helpful to beat the snow off some of your fruit trees so they don't lose branches due to the weight. When our temperatures hover around freezing and we can get ice forming around the branches, that's like a really big cause for concern. So we just want to consider all of the tender things and the extra weight that this weather brings.
How about some of the overwintering plants? Are they okay? I mean, I'm thinking about my kale that is in the garden.
Yeah, kale's going to be fine. Chard's going to be fine. I'm a little bit concerned about my peas. I was an overachiever trying to have the earliest peas. So I'm looking forward to learning on whether they make it or break it this year. They were just coming out of the soil when the snow hit.
Well, I want to talk about that, kind of getting that jump start on the season. You've already mentioned that you're trying to do that with your peas. What are some things that people can do to prepare the soil for the coming season?
It's a great time to start gleaning materials for the compost pile. Now's a perfect time to get your soil tests done. I use A&L Labs and Tigard, and by having a soil test, it helps me know exactly what amendments are needed to support the growth of my plants. For example, my blueberries weren't doing that good, and I got a soil test done, and I realized that the pH level was not complementary for blueberries. So I've been working on amending the soil. With blueberries, I try to make it more acidic with sulfur, and now's a good time to do that in the cool time of the year. It's also good to lime your soil. I probably would wait until March or so to start liming the soil to make it more for in places where we want it to be more alkaline.
So it's exciting to start thinking about the plants. And you mentioned peas. What are there vegetables that people can be starting right now?
Yeah, well, peas and fava beans are traditionally what's usually started by seed in February. It's usually recommended to get your tomatoes started in March or April, and then March is the most common recommended starting time for greens and plants in the Brassicaceae family, like cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, all of those. For me, I actually have my tomatoes, peppers, kales, collards, and other brassicas started right now as I'm preparing for my spring nursery season and my CSA. With my CSA, my subscribers get one flat of vegetable starts each month during the growing season, and I start that up in April. So I want to be sure that I'm ready. And I'm actually leaving the country on Sunday to go teach a class in Belize. So that's why I started early. When I return in mid-March, I'm going to be starting some of the faster-growing brassicas, like the mustard greens and choys. And then I'll also start my lettuce in mid-March, although I have noticed that lettuce has naturally come up in the garden. So we'll see what happens with the snow.
So if people are as motivated as you at getting your starts going, do you have any advice for people on how to best, you know, with as far as timing goes, as far as what materials to use, how to best make their starts?
Yeah, I mean, we have such a opportunity in this town right now to have some really nice lights for starting plants indoors. I'm using some T5 lights that are working really nicely. I use a grow mat under my trays to heat the soil before plants germinate, and then I'll turn it off. And I've actually found that the Coco Number 5 potting soil that's sold at Naomi's is much better than a seed starting mix. You want to start your seeds in soil that's really fine, so those tender seedlings have an easy time emerging out of the soil. However, some seed starting mixes don't have enough nutrients in them, and then the seedlings don't do as well once they emerge. So it's good to have lights. Some people will start seeds in a window, but that's not ideal. And then I think one important thing to consider, just because I mentioned starting seeds so early, is where are you going to move them when they need to get bigger? And many people don't have that heated, warm space to put plants before they are ready to go outside.
Great. So making sure that they have that transition space. I know that that's something that I've run against in the past. I have all these beautiful starts, and it's just not quite time to put them out.
Yeah, last year was a classic example of like everyone being ready to get their tomatoes out, and it just was cold for so long. I ended up getting a frost blanket. They had those at Garden Fever, and it would keep the temperature under the blanket. My plants were able to be like 8 degrees warmer or so, and that really made a big difference once my indoor space was full and I needed to move things out into my outdoor greenhouse, and it still wasn't warm enough because our tomatoes, we want to have our minimum evening temperatures at least 50 degrees before they can go outside without cover. So I've got a nice maximum minimum thermometer that I keep out in the greenhouse to monitor the temperatures. And also that's for the air temperatures. And then it's also good to have a thermometer to monitor your soil temperatures, because both of those are the thresholds of our plants being able to survive.
Great. I'm glad you're talking about temperatures. I know we're talking about getting a jump on the season and trying to kind of get things going early, but then there also is it's worth it to wait on certain things. So can you talk a little bit more about kind of the things that we should hold off on and what temperatures we need it to be to be able to grow those successfully?
Yeah, it is so worth it to wait. I mean, first, to just consider our average last frost statistically is April 26th. Last year, our last frost was March 19th. So depending on the investment that you have, it might be worthwhile to start things earlier and know that they might not make it. I started my seeds for my peas knowing that maybe I had a chance and maybe they weren't going to make it. I've heard some gardeners already making predictions before this week, of course, that we weren't going to have any more frost. So I don't believe that. I think we need to plan as if our last frost is going to be in mid to late April, and, you know, just go with it and be conservative. So, you know, the brassicas, like you said earlier, you're concerned about your kale. It's going to be fine. If you've got tender starts that you're putting out, you might want to put them under cover. You could do that by just putting like a milk jug over them that has the bottom cut out, or even like a blanket or a frost blanket. With tender starts, you'll want to have like some sort of framework so that the blanket doesn't rest on them. But definitely the warm season crops, we shouldn't even plan on having those out until the beginning of May. And if we have a season like last year, you know, it might not be until mid-May.
Great. So
as far as you wanted some threshold temperatures?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So like soil temperatures, we're looking for a soil temperature of like 34 to 36 for starting our peas. Potatoes, 39 to 41. And so that's we usually start our potatoes around St. Patrick's Day around here. Other plants that can handle those low temperatures in the, you know, mid to upper 30s would be onions, carrots, and cabbage. And then, you know, radishes even want like a 40, 45 or so degree temperature. And those are soil temperatures. And so then you want to be able to juxtapose those with air temperatures. And the peas would take a minimum air temperature of 38 to 42 degrees. You know, so we've got similarly potatoes around 43 degrees. So, and you never know, you know, some plants are bred for being more hardy and things can become more adaptable, but those are the general temperatures. I have this really hardy spicy pepper that I grow like a house plant, and I bring it in the winter, and then I'll bring it out in the summer, and it lives for about 3 years. This year I put it outside during the cold because it had some white fly and I needed to get rid of it. I thought for sure that plant was a goner for the temperatures that it withstood, and it's coming back from the base. So, you know, this is one plant as an example that's being bred to really handle some colder temperatures.
Great. So we're about out of time, but I just want to kind of, if you have a list of other things that people can be doing to jumpstart their growing season, I'm thinking tool care or planning. Yeah.
Yeah. Oiling and sharpening your tools is a great thing to do right now. Mapping your garden and identifying your microclimates on where you want to grow things and having a plan for your beds. It's also a great time to finish up pruning your fruit trees and berry bushes, of course, once this snow goes away. And then top dressing asparagus, strawberries, and raspberries with compost is ideal to do right now. And then, of course, as we need to do all winter, patrol for slugs so that we can minimize those slug populations before those tender sweet brassicas go in the ground.
Great. And Marisha, what classes or events do you have coming up, and how can people find more information about the work that you're doing?
Well, I'm going to be going to Belize shortly to teach my annual permaculture design course at the Maya Mountain Research Farm. That's March 3rd through 16th, and there's still space if anyone wants to go to Belize and have this delightful experience. My next workshop in my Grow Your Own Produce workshop series is on Tuesday, March 20th. And we're going to be talking about indoor seed starting, early season plantings, and perennial vegetables. I'm also doing a presentation on permaculture with the Hardy Plant Society on March 24th. And I'm getting ready for my spring, for my Vegetable Start CSA program. I have a small plant nursery, neighborhood scale, and I provide plants during plant sales off my driveway, but I also have a community-supported agriculture program where my subscribers get one flat of vegetable starts each month, April through September, of just the best plants for them to get in the ground at just the right time. I also have some other plant packages for people who want to sign up, who maybe people are interested in growing edible flowers but don't know which ones. You could just get a bulk edible flower package. And all of my packages are available as half shares as well for people with smaller growing spaces or for people who don't have a bed to grow things in. Everything's available as a potted plant too, if that's what people need. And all of this can be found on my website at permaculturerising.com.
Great. Marisha, it's always a pleasure to talk gardening with you.
Thanks, Chris. It's a pleasure here too.
That was permaculturist Marisha Auerbach. You're listening to The Food Show on KBOO. In a moment, I'll be talking with Holly Hutchison and Melissa Colon about the upcoming CSA Share Fair hosted by PACSAC. Stay with us.
Feel the gentle rotation stop. I know my words will dry upon the skin, just like a name I remember hearing. Wild winters, warm coffee, mom's gone. Do you love me? Blazing summer, cold coffee, baby's gone. Do you love me?
Wrap me in your arms, I can't feel it burn.
Rock me in your arms, I can't feel it hurt. Get up, get down, get up, get down. Feel the generation and stop, see the next one waiting. Get up, get down, get up, get down, get up.
This is The Food Show on KBOO. I'm Chris Siegel. For several years, I ran a small farm and we had a CSA. I loved growing food for people, but the best part of the job was building relationships with the individuals and families who supported the farm. When people came to pick up their produce boxes, we talked about recipes and food, sure, but we also got to hear life updates and see some of the kids who were eating our vegetables grow up. Knowing the person who grows your food is a great way to deepen your relationship with food. That's the reason I'm joined in the studio by Molly Hutchison and Melissa Cullen from the Portland Area CSA Coalition, or PACSAC. PACSAC is hosting their fourth annual CSA Share Fair on February 25th. It's an opportunity to go and meet farmers from the area and sign up for a CSA. Holly and Melissa, welcome to The Food Show.
Hi, thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
So we're going to get into the CSA Share Fair, but I think we should talk about CSAs in general first. Can you tell us what it means to be a part of a CSA?
Speaking as a CSA farmer, what it means to be a part of a CSA is you are directly invested in the success of a small farm, usually a local farm, and it is the most direct way that you can support the sustainable farming movement.
And from a consumer point of view, I've been a CSA member for over a decade, and it's really fun to get the bags of vegetables. You get a huge bag of gorgeous produce once a week, and you know what day to pick it up, and there's always something interesting in there, and you know that you're feeding your family the best food you possibly can. And it's fun as a cook too. I mean, you get to try new recipes and experiment with these vegetables you can't find in the supermarket. It's really fun.
So then let's talk about CSA in this area. Let's talk a little bit about PACSAC. Who makes up the organization?
So PACSAC is a nonprofit organization comprised of farmers and community members who are passionate about community-supported agriculture. And we are here to try to make people more aware of CSA as an option. And we are here to support CSA farmers and help community members find the farmers that will be a good match for their family.
And I do want to say, Melissa, you run a farm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My partner Teague and I run a farm called Winslow Food Forest, and we got our start as young farmers through CSA, and it kind of speaks to the versatility of community-supported agriculture programs because they can also function kind of as an incubator program for young farmers who may not have the startup capital at the beginning of the season in order to pull off a successful first year of farming. You can get investments from community members in your farm as a young farmer through community-supported agriculture. And that was what allowed us to grow as young farmers and eventually get to the point where we have a lease from the city of Portland now to grow a food forest. And we've kind of developed our niche there and CSA can be incredibly versatile. There's ways to support salmon, sustainable harvested salmon. You can get meat shares. You can do dairy shares, egg shares, flour shares. It's really a way to support these people who are on the front line of sustainable agriculture out there growing these products, handing them directly to you as a customer.
And Melissa, how did you get connected with PACSAC in the first place?
Well, actually, PACSAC found me when I first started my farm. They found us and they said, we know about you. And I didn't know about them, but they were very supportive of my small farm. And so as the years went on, I've been farming now for about 5 years. And I saw an opportunity to serve the board, and I decided to join and try to give back the way they had given to my young farm. And I'd like to try to, you know, pay that forward.
And Holly, what role does PACSAC play connecting farmers with potential consumers?
Well, that's a great question. I think that that's one of our critical goals is, you know, we have a database and a connection to all of the farmers that that have CSA as one of their models. And we also are trying to get the community support as well, like connect with the community, people who might buy shares. And so we provide the critical juncture of where you go to get the information you need to find the best CSA share for your family, because there's all different kinds of shares. You can have large shares, you can have small shares, you can have winter shares, summer shares, and not all CSA shares are appropriate for all people. And so it's really important that people can find the CSA share that best fits with their lifestyle, like how much do they cook, where can they pick up their food, all of those types of questions. And so PACSAC provides all of that information. We collect it from the farmers, we make it available to the public, so it's much easier for someone to find the most ideal CSA share for their family.
And you talked a little bit about the farms and farmers involved, but I'm curious if you can kind of tell me about the farmers around the Portland area.
I have been so impressed and astounded by these people. They are so invested in keeping our land and our food system healthy. I mean, they have the most amazing organic biodynamic practices. I've learned about permaculture. I've learned about food forests. I mean, these are amazing, amazing people. And the product that they provide is stunning. And the amount of hours that they work is also stunning. And I've met so many of these farmers, and time after time, I'm just impressed by how hard they work and what they provide us.
I want to give a shout out to Superfresh Farms as one of the farms I'm really excited to see at the Share Fair this Sunday. And they are an organization of teenagers and right in Portland who are offering a CSA, and they're incredibly hardworking and just super inspiring. Another one that's pretty cool, Cully Neighborhood Farm, is another one that people may have heard of before that offers CSA. 47th Avenue Farm. There are about 40 farms represented at the CSA Share Fair. So it basically does function as a matchmaking event for the community members and the farmers. And there actually is even a matchmaking booth. You go in and you can say, here's what I need out of a CSA, and we're going to help you find the farmer that suits your needs. And that's a way for you to be able to plug into this community and eat better, be healthier, support your farmers. And it's basically like a win-win-win all around. There's just a ton of positives outcomes from community-supported agriculture.
Great. So you've kind of teased the CSA Share Fair, and that's why we're all here chatting. So I want you to tell me a little bit more about the event. You said 40 farmers are going to be there. What are the kinds of farmers that people can expect to talk to?
Oh my goodness, we've got such a range. It's amazing. So we have farms that have been in their family five generations and have been using the CSA model for as long as it's been around, 20, 25 years. And then we have small farms that are just starting up, and they're very, like Melissa was talking about, they're urban. And Little Starts is one. And there's a fellow up in North Portland who runs Mark's Market Gardens. and he uses backyards of people who have given him their backyards, essentially. He just farms in people's backyards, and he collects the produce, and he delivers it by bicycle to your house. So that's very small scale, very independent. It's a one-man operation. And then we have Iliamna Fish, who has longline salmon. Longline may not be the right term, but they have wonderful salmon products. They've been CSA providers for a long time. There's a company that does tuna called Trayfin, Dayboat Tuna Fishing. They do all of their packaging and prep right on the boat. And it's very fresh, and it's a wonderful product. So there's a large range of farms that are going to be there.
And so aside from getting to meet with the farmers there, is there anything else going on at the share fair?
Oh, yeah. We try to bring in some stuff that can also help people approach their large, you know, bag of produce, because it can be a little intimidating. You have a huge bag, and then what do you do with it? So we've got Catherine Däumling is going to be there. She runs a Cook With What You Have, and she is remarkable in the kitchen. She'll take anything you can throw at her and turn it into something delicious and edible very quickly. So she'll be doing demos. We have Joshua McFadden from Ava Jeans, just wrote a wonderful cookbook called Six Seasons. It's a must for any CSA owner, how to cook your vegetables no matter what season it is and what you have. Jim Dixon from Real Good Food is going to be there, and he is making something called gumbo zerbs, which is a 9 leafy green vegetable gumbo. A little bit of pork in there too, right? But he's got all kinds of leafy greens, so it's the best thing you could do with all your winter vegetables. So yeah, we try to keep it fun. And we also have a CSB this year, a community-supported beer.
Awesome.
Yeah. So people get creative, and the important thing is that it's direct to consumer. So the farmer and the producer makes their own product, and you buy it directly from them. No middlemen. So minimizing the carbon footprint, minimizing all of the storage and the production and the transportation. You know, the dollars go directly from you to the producer. So that's kind of a keystone of the CSA model.
So obviously you're trying to kind of make these connections between people, but for the folks who attend this event, what do you want them to get out of it? What's the takeaway?
Oh, I want them to meet their farmers. The farmers have so much to share and are so interested in meeting people and telling them what CSA is about and telling them about farming. And so I think developing a connection with a farmer would be really important. And I think secondary to that, if they decide that subscribing to CSA is good for them, that they go ahead and do it. You know, I would like to promote the CSA model and try to bring people into it.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to add in there too, and for the sake of inclusivity, we do have a way to accept SNAP payments from customers as well. And so people from all income levels are welcome to be a part of this community. And that's a big mission of PACSAC too, is to promote equitable food justice. So,
yeah, there are a lot of farms that have work shares. So if you maybe don't want to put all the money forward at the beginning of the season, you can talk to the individual farmer and perhaps volunteer to work on their farm in exchange for a share. There are a lot of farmers that allow that. So definitely going to the matchmaking booth at the beginning of your trip to the fair would be really helpful. You can talk to them about what you need in a CSA, and they can help steer you to the potential candidates.
Great. And Melissa, as a farmer, what are you hoping to get out of the event?
Well, primarily at this point, I serve PACSAC as a volunteer on the board. And so I'm just hoping to see the farmers who are participating in the share fair meet new customers, new community members. I'm hoping to see a lot of celebration and joy, which has always been a part of the CSA share fair. It's usually a really good time. And so I'm just looking forward to having a fun time.
I always loved the off season because it was the opportunity to get to like see all the people who are just so busy during the growing season.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit, but we have a few more minutes, and I want to talk about kind of the future of CSAs. It's really interesting because when I had a CSA, we were mostly just talking about farms, but to hear how the model is spreading, What do you see as the future of CSAs in the food system?
CSA is an important economic model for farms. It's not the best model for every farm, and it's not the best model for every community member, but it is a really important economic model. So I think that I think CSA will persist, but I think it will evolve like everything else. I mean, one of the major reasons people leave CSAs is because they don't have enough say over what goes into their share every week. And some farmers have figured out ways around that. You know, there's different kinds of customization, which is really, really hard when you're a busy farmer. But there's ways you can leave produce out on a table and people can come pick what they want. You know, so I think the important thing is that we collect the data, we understand what it's telling us, and then we react to it. And I think if the farmers use CSA, it can help them, but they also have to evolve with it too. So we're trying to help that intersection, try to figure out where to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely become a trending marketing model. If you see a lot of bigger corporations basically repackaging wholesale produce and marketing it in the CSA kind of slogans and things like that. So it's important to distinguish between, you know, actual community supported agriculture and trending marketing models that are just kind of biting on that in order to make a profit for a wholesale distributor.
And I think it's exciting to hear that, you know, this in the evolution that there are so many options. I mean, CSA is just so broad. And I think that a lot of people have this predisposition that it is this one thing, that it's farmers choosing what you get and then that's it. So it's exciting with this event that people can go and they can explore and they can kind of enter that world.
Yep, that's absolutely what we want, is people to walk around and figure out what CSA is and how it fits with them.
So we've got about 30 seconds left, but I real quick want to make sure that you get a chance to tell us all the details of the
CSA
Share Fair.
So the Share Fair is going to be this coming Sunday on the 25th. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and it runs until 3 o'clock. And we're holding it at the Irving Street Studio, which is in the Pearl District. It's in the EcoTrust building. Most people will recognize that as the former Patagonia space. So 9 to 3 on Sunday, and all kinds of farms and all kinds of fun things to do, and there's going to be food too. So we really look forward to seeing a whole bunch of people out there.
And if you're not able to make it to the Share Fair and you're still interested in finding your CSA farm, you can go to portlandcsa.org and you can search for your farmer there.
Great. Melissa and Holly, thank you so much for joining me on the Food Show.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us.
That was Holly Hutchison, Program Director of PACSAC, and Melissa Cullen, co-owner of Winslow Food Forest and volunteer board member at PACSAC. And that's it for this episode of The Food Show. If you missed any of the show or want to listen back, you can find the episode archived on the KBOO website at kboo.fm. I want to thank our guests, Megan Shea, Holly Hutchison, Melissa Cullen, and Marisha Auerbach for being on today's show. I also want to thank our awesome engineers. We had Derek and Crystal this week. Stay with KBOO this afternoon, starting with Jazz Lives. And also, if you haven't already, check out the KBOO Community Radio Kickstarter. We're just over a quarter of the way to our goal, but we still need your help to build a city of media makers. And don't forget to tune in again next month on the third Wednesday of March for another episode of The Food Show. Until then, I'm Chris Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Trees down just to grow a bunch of cheap hamburger meat. You know those trees.
KBOO Community Radio and While Rome Burns are proud to co-sponsor a concert with the Reverb Brothers and Metropolitan Farms to benefit Rose Haven on Sunday, February 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza and Pub in Portland. The Reverb Brothers play a blend of 30s jazz and blues, traditional country, New Orleans R&B, rock and roll, soul, their take on Americana. Metropolitan Farms play a mix between 80s college rock and pop, Britpop, and 70s West Coast rock. The show is a benefit for Rose Haven, which serves women and children experiencing the trauma of abuse, loss of home, and other disruptive life challenges. Again, that's the Reverb Brothers and Metropolitan Farms to benefit Rose Haven on Sunday, February 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza and Pub, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Michael Casehammer in concert on Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Newmark Theater in Portland. Michael Casehammer, known mostly as Canadian jazz and boogie-woogie pianist and vocalist, will be performing with a six-piece band touring for his 11th album called No Filter. Again, that's Michael Casehammer in concert on Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Newmark Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Afro-Latin Funk Night with New Triumph on February 8th at the Goodfoot in Portland. Afro-Latin Funk with New Triumph will be featuring some of the best players in Seattle's vibrant music scene. Enjoy a night of energetic, danceable, intriguing music from newly released albums Starship Estrada and Keep Pushin'. This is a 21 and up event. Again, that's Afro-Latin Funk Night with New Triumph, Thursday, February 8th, 9